The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello, welcome to the Yes to Life show, a show about integrative medicine for cancer. I'm Robin Daly, the show host and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that helps people with cancer to find out about and benefit from integrative medicine techniques. In the show, I talk to a broad range of people involved in integrative medicine, healthcare specialists and those affected by cancer, as well as researchers and activists. My guest today falls firmly in that last category. Scott Tipps is president of the National Health Federation, a health freedom organisation with a particular role in global food policy. I'm talking to Scott over Skype. Hi Scott, very many thanks for agreeing to come on the Yes to Life show this week.
Thank you, Robin, my pleasure.
So you're a legal specialist, a long-term board member of the NHF, the National Health Federation, which is a campaigning organisation, very involved with the workings of something called Codex Alimentarius.
Yes.
Now, the listeners to the Yes to Life show are probably better informed than average, but Codex Alimentarius, probably many people have never heard of it. They have no idea what it is or what it does. So why should anyone be concerned about it?
Well, if anyone's concerned about their health, about the food they eat, the water and other drinks that they drink, then they should be concerned about Codex Alimentarius because it is setting the standards and guidelines worldwide for the foods and drinks that we consume, and it's increasing in importance almost every day. So it's vital. The governments that are involved in Codex Alimentarius comprise 99% of the world's population. And this is something where 7 billion people literally are affected by Codex standards and guidelines.
Wow. Right. So maybe we can just start out by going over the history of Codex. When did it get started and what was its stated mission when it set out?
Well, it started about 8 years after our organization, National Health Federation, was founded. And so that means 1963. And it was founded under the auspices of the Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, and the World Health Organization, the WHO, with two purposes, both of which are really kind of noble, and we agree with at NHF. That is, to protect the consumer, nothing wrong with that, and to eliminate international barriers to trade in food. And, you know, I'm just going to say food, but it also includes drink. So international barriers to trade in food. And we agree with that as well. It should be, you know, open borders when it comes to trading food and the like, although it should be healthy food. And so those have been its ostensible purposes. And to a certain extent, like the Codex Secretariat and others really tried to adhere to that, and they deserve a lot of credit for it. But somewhere along the line, especially starting in 1995, Codex was really hijacked by special interest groups, corporate interest groups, and government regulators who've really taken it off in the wrong direction.
Mm. Okay, so importantly as well for a lot of our listeners, food includes supplements, which have, of course, increasingly come on the scene.
Yes, very true.
Yeah, so these are all affected by the workings of Codex. The organization you head up, the NHF, it's also got a long history, as you said. Do you want to tell me how and why it got started and when you became involved?
Yes, and actually it's funny you asked it that way, Robin. No one's really asked it quite that way, and I appreciate it, because it was started by a gentleman named Fred Hart, and he had been trying to save his wife from cancer and had invented or built, I'm sorry, I don't remember which, but it's on our website, thenhf.com. We have a little history of Fred Hart. But in order to save his wife from dying of cancer, he built an electromagnetic device, kind of similar to a Rife machine, to treat her with. Well, the FDA, the FDA came down, the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. came down on him like a ton of bricks and charged him with fraud and all of that. And to this day, if you read our Wikipedia listing for the National Health Federation, you'll see that that's one of the foremost things they like to talk about, because obviously Wikipedia is controlled by pharmacy trolls and you can't get anything good mentioned about alternative health there. But be that as it may, after he unsuccessfully fought the FDA and his wife died, Fred Hart founded this organization called the National Health Federation. And it was called the Federation because it was intended to be and has been sort of an umbrella group for all sorts of individuals, consumers, doctors, chiropractors, Reiki practitioners, you name it. And they're all within the umbrella. And for about 40 years, from 1955 until about the mid-90s, we were the only game in town, at least in the United States. And we had members worldwide, of course. In fact, to this day, we have an NHF UK based out of, well, I guess it'd be Manchester now, or Lancashire. But in any event, the organization has been involved in fighting fluoridation of public water supplies, over vaccinations, support the rights of individuals to choose whatever health modalities or healthcare treatments they want to. We save chiropractors in the United States because they were being persecuted by the state medical boards and the American Medical Association. We got them out from under that. We were responsible for that and the ability for chiropractors to practice the way they do now. The vitamins and mineral supplement freedoms that we have today are in large part due to the NHF, not entirely, because some others joined in the mid-90s. And then one thing we did, Robin, that was very important, and we didn't really realize the importance of it at the time, but we thought it could become important, and sure enough, it did. That is, about 20 years ago, we started sending a reporter to report on the Codex Alimentarius meetings, because suddenly they had assumed a lot more importance. Before the WTO, the World Trade Organization, was created, Codex was pretty much a toothless organization. I mean, we could see standards being created there that say, oh, you have this much. And let me just digress a moment and say, when you create a standard, what you're really creating, there's standards and guidelines. Guidelines are sort of like the general principles by which you set the standards. And then the standards are the actual hard numbers that tell you what you can do. You can have this many parts per million of glyphosate in your wheat. You can have this much methyl mercury in your salmon. You can have this much melamine in your infant formula, that sort of thing. You can have this level of vitamins as the RDA, or what they call the nutrient reference values, and so on. Those are the hard standards. The guidelines sort of just tell you how you arrive at those. So in any event, they're creating these standards, but there's no enforcement mechanism. Well, after the Uruguay round of treaty negotiations amongst the nations back in 94 and then into 95, GATT was discarded and replaced with the World Trade Organization. Suddenly you had these arbitration panels who could levy trade sanctions against offending nations, like if someone were creating an artificial barrier to trade. And indeed, that's what the EU did, bless its heart, because I'm not a fan of the EU, but in this case, they really did something good because they set up a trade barrier for North American products that contain genetically modified organisms. They were blocking them from going into the EU. And so what the U.S. did, and I think Canada may have joined in, is they brought a trade dispute before the trade panels there at WTO and claimed this was an unfair trade practice by the EU because it was healthy to eat GM foods. And the EU said, no, it's not healthy. Anyway, long story made short, the WTO ruled against the EU, and the EU to this day annually has to pay a huge fine because of this. But this is what they do. So when it comes to a standard being created at Codex, it's enormously important because if the U.S. decides, well, look, we want to push Zilpaterol, that drug that's given to animals to make them leaner, but it has no health benefits, and it's blocked quite properly so by EU countries from being exported into or imported into the EU. So the U.S. could bring a trade dispute. What's the first thing the WTO will do? If there's a trade dispute involving food, it will look to Codex as the standard setter and say, does a Codex standard exist? If the answer is yes, they'll look at it. And if the U.S., for example, meets the standard with the food that it's exporting or wanting to export to Russia or the EU or Switzerland or Norway or India, all of whom would block these things, in the case of Zilpaterol, then the WTO will rule in favor of the U.S. and against the EU and the other countries. So this is why it's so hugely important. And what happened is that when we became accredited about, 16 years ago, NHF became accredited by Codex. We sort of slipped through the cracks. And now we can, you know, since then, 2002, we've been able to speak out at the meetings, just as the U.S. does, just as the EU delegates do, just as the UK delegate might, although usually he's supplanted by the EU delegate, at least until Brexit kicks in. And so what we have is we have an equal right to speak out at the meetings, and we do so unabashedly. And frankly, kind of aggressively, so much so that a lot of the delegates there are kind of afraid of us now. And we were very vocal at the Chicago meeting last April on the Zilpaterol issue because Merck had been pushing this drug, even though it causes cattle hooves to fall off, even though it caused 75 to 90% increase in heart problems for cattle and the like, let alone that you and I would say if you go to the U.S., because it is approved by the FDA there, and you were to eat, you know, an American breakfast with bacon and sausage and the like, if even if the bacon and sausage is from Canada or Mexico, the same will apply, and you'll be dosed with a small amount of Zilpaterol residue, which makes the heart beat faster, increases some other cardiac pressure problems and the like. And so, you know, by itself, I mean, we'd probably all survive that. But when you put it on the scale of all the other toxins that we're subjected to, you know, plasticizers and pesticides and glyphosate and vaccinations and EMFs and the like, you know, it all adds up. So we don't need another toxin in our system. And this is why we fought it. And we were so aggressive about it there that we stopped it from being approved for a Codex standard. And Merck was so angry at us, Robin, you wouldn't even believe. But what they did is they went up to the head table, unbeknownst to me, although I kind of saw him up there, but I didn't know what he was doing. And he was showing his cell phone to the Codex scientific rep who, you know, didn't think much about it. I went to lunch. I came back a little bit late because I had to make a phone call. And I heard everyone applauding. Well, we had just, NHF that is, had just been denounced from the head table by the Codex scientific officer who had said, we are not, he kept insisting, we are not junk science like NHF says, we're real science. Well, yeah. It was really kind of funny in a way. But, and then just about that time, the Merck representative came over, he's based in Brussels, he came over and chortled in my ear about, oh, they all hate you now, you're done for here. And I I found out later when I inquired a bit further that he had also gone up to the Codex Secretariat, that's the head of the Codex office, mm-hmm. and had shown him a picture that had been taken of him and me together, like, you know, I don't know, like we were, you know, conspiring about something, or and it was a real subtle, or maybe not so subtle, warning to the Codex Secretariat not to be involved with us, you know, trying anything they could do. Well, what's so funny, too, is later, I think just earlier this month, I was shown some information that said that Merck had some internal memos that said when doctors who opposed Biox, they would set out to destroy those particular doctors. So it sort of shows the mentality, as if we didn't know already, but it certainly shows the mentality of Merck and what they will do. And they had spent millions of dollars on trying to get this through Codex. Now, they have a chance again in 2 years' time, probably at this point, a year and a half's time, when the committee meets again to relaunch. And I'm sure they'll do it with a lot more determination. And but we will too, and we'll maintain our allies, I hope, to do it. You know, we had the EU, Norway, Switzerland, Russia, India on our side, and maybe what was it, Mozambique or Madagascar, I can't remember, anyway, one of those African countries. But the sad thing about it was NHF was the only one to challenge it on scientific grounds. Even the EU kind of rolled over like a cheap drunk on a Saturday night binge when it said, well, we don't challenge the science on it, because evidently EFSA had already passed on that. But for public policy reasons, we oppose it. So that led to the chant by the Merck minions to say, well, you know, then we do have consensus here and it should be approved, and so on. So anyway, that just gives you a snippet of insight into how these codex things work.
Wow, it's quite a fight, isn't it? Yeah. So, I mean, you've already mentioned a few things we are obviously a bit pleased about. You've got a sort of best wins from over the years.
Oh, gosh, yes. You know, it's kind of funny how it worked, Robin, because the first 9 years we of going to these meetings, and I'm not including the years when we sent the reporter, I mean when we actually attended as a member of a delegation and then as an actual acknowledged, accredited INGO. But the first 9 years, we had like no real significant victories, a few minor ones here and there, but loss after loss after loss. It's very discouraging, actually, but it really shows the benefits of persevering. Oh, and we were laughed at, ridiculed, sidelined, all of that. You know, people really thought to disregard us in many ways. But it was funny, in the year 2009, that was our first big win, where they were trying to dumb down the vitamin and nutrient levels and supplements, and well, in food as well, the RDAs. Like, just an example, vitamin C, they wanted to lower from an already miserable 60 milligrams a day. I mean, that's like eating one orange a day. It's nothing. If we still had the gene working in our bodies to manufacture it, we'd be manufacturing 8,000 to 10,000 milligrams a day, not a measly 60. That's our optimal level, not the amount that's meant to prevent scurvy. Anyway, they wanted to lower it from 60 to 45 milligrams a day. Thank you, Australia. Thank you, New Zealand. They were the main ones pushing it. And we were able, almost single-handedly, but with some last-minute help from India and the Iraqi delegation, we were able to stop that from going through. And so it then became a very slow process of over 5 years. We were able to reverse the energy. We killed the momentum. Then we reversed the energy on that. And we really got some significantly higher values for some, not all admittedly, but some of these nutrients, including vitamin C, which was increased 220% instead of being reduced by 25%. Excellent. Then our other victory was getting... Yeah, it worked out really, really well. And then, you know, 2010, we had another victory into 11. 2012, we were able to stop just trying to pick out the highlights because I know we don't have a ton of time here. But melamine, the Australia, once again, was trying to sneak in melamine into infant formula. Remember, melamine was that man-made substance that the Chinese put into cat and dog food in North America, killed, you know, many thousands of cats and dogs, and sickened many more thousands, because it's a cheap substitute for protein. It's not supposed to be used that way, but if you just measure the protein content by using nitrogen levels, then it'll appear, since melamine is very nitrogen rich. It's sort of like throwing concrete into flour and then baking bread and saying, oh, this is a loaf of bread, you know. But that's what they were doing with cat food and dog food, and then later with infant formula as well. Well, there's a total ban at Codex, to be fair to Codex. There's a total ban if it's deliberately introduced. But if it comes in because of packaging, you know, that aseptic packaging that you get at the Marks and Spencer's there, and you has that foil lining on the inside, yes, that's actually sprayed on melamine. Yeah. Well, if you get something acidic in that packaging, it will actually leach out the melamine into the drink, into the orange juice, into whatever acidic drink you have, and then you ingest it. And in this case, Australia was saying, look, for infant formula, we think exemption should be there in place for any packaging contamination of infant formula by melamine. And believe it or not, NHFI at the meeting, this separate committee meeting called the Codex Committee on Contaminants in Foods, hosted by the Dutch government, held usually in that country every year. And it was my first time attending that particular committee meeting. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, raised my flag and asked to speak. And I said, this is not right. This should be opposed. That was in 2010. Well, they, you know, were very polite about it, but they disregarded my comment. Well, by the next meeting, because all of these standards have to go through an 8-step process usually, mm-hmm, before being approved. So it wasn't automatically approved right then and there. But at the next meeting, I had the Central American Hispanic women on my side. So suddenly there were about treble the number of voices speaking out, and maybe even more, quadruple. But we still lost. Then at the next meeting, I then had like half the room on my side, but we still lost. And then it goes up to the commission that gives the final seal of approval. And by then it had more than half. And we argued fairly eloquently. I mean, everyone did, not just me. And the chairwoman of the Codex Commission itself, bless her heart, saw the wisdom of kicking it down to the committee. It got kicked back to the committee. And in March of 2012, when the committee met again and had to reconsider it, I had everyone, even Australia, withdrew the standard for that, and we won. So we were keeping at least these high levels of melamine out of infant formula. So that I consider quite a victory right there. And then I won't spend as much time on the others because, again, in the interest of time, but getting 3/4 of aluminum out of food additives was due to us in the EU. Mm-hmm. Getting methyl mercury levels in swordfish set far lower. Getting, we're working on biofortification definition right now. In fact, I go to a meeting in about 3 weeks, the end of November 2018. I will be in Berlin, and we will be finding the biofortification definition. And the reason we'll be doing that, biofortification is supposed to be just conventional plant breeding to increase the nutrient values of certain foods, like potatoes being richer in iron, rice being richer in vitamin A and the like. Of course, the only reason they have to do it is because the industry has so sadly depleted the soils that are, you know, in the last 50 years, our vitamin mineral levels of our foods have been lowered by 50%. But put that to one side, there's at least this laudable goal to increase the nutrient content of some of our foods. And it was meant to cover, even as Australia admitted, it was meant to cover just conventional plant breeding. But Monsanto and others want to disguise its genetically engineered foods as biofortified. And fortunately, NHF and the EU, once again, have been standing in their path, and we blocked it. But it's coming up again 3 weeks' time, it's coming up, and we'll be fighting it at this upcoming meeting of the Nutrition Committee in Berlin.
Those guys don't give up easily, eh?
No, they don't. And they have a ton of money, and they have a ton of people there, and we just go by the grace of God. You know, the funny thing, Robin, when I went and attended the Dusseldorf meeting in 2009, where we stopped the RDAs from being dumbed down for vitamins and minerals, I was kind of a hero because of it and all of that, and I spoke the words. But, you know, it was one of our members in Dublin, Ireland, who contributed the $1,000 that let me go to that meeting. If he hadn't done that, I wouldn't have been there to say anything.
Right.
So, you know, he's the real hero, this guy, single guy in Dublin, who sent us there to speak out. So people can make a difference. He made a difference in the lives of 7 billion people, worldwide, all because of that single contribution. And it's not that everyone has to give $1,000 or £1,000 or whatever it is, but every little bit adds up, because we don't have big taxpayers' pockets to pay our way, and we don't have big corporate donors or anything like that. It's just little people like you and me who do that. But, most of the delegates at these meetings are MHRA-type bureaucrats who go. And, most of them are very poorly educated when it comes to nutrition, and certainly zero interest in health freedom. And it's all, like with most bureaucracies, it's all about procedure. If you follow the procedure, then who cares about the outcome? We followed procedure. If it had a bad outcome, it's not our fault. That's sort of the bureaucratic mentality, and it certainly applies at Codex as well.
Mm-hmm. Scary. Okay, well,
yes.
The Yes Life Show, it's all about integrative medicine for cancer, so we always like to look at things from the person with cancer's point of view. And I've identified two areas in what you said which are particularly of interest to people with cancer, and that is... The nutrient content of supplements will be something of particular interest, and the avoidance of toxins in all their food and environment, which is also of high interest to people who've got cancer, who are kind of thinking outside the box. Do you want to say any more about those? And have I missed anything else that actually would be of interest to people with cancer?
For cancer, right. Well, there's been a lot of evidence shown that taking a high dose vitamin C throughout the day, you know, because it really has a half-life of 2 to 4 hours. And it's been shown that you can maintain high levels even orally if you will take 500 milligrams 4 to 6 times a day. Mm-hmm. And that combined with IP6 and, believe it or not, some calcium has been shown by some to really cut into cancer, as will modified citrus pectin. But the big killer on the block really is GCMAF, the glycoprotein macrophage activating factor. That there are a lot of fraudulent products out there, but there are some genuine ones. But the problem is people like MHRA, is they are prosecuting anyone, you know, associated with GCMAF. In fact, there's a big thing going on in London in the Southwark courthouse, where one of our board members who was selling really the highest quality GCMAF around in the world is now going to be sentenced because he was only helping people. He helped 11,500 people. No one was killed. No one was hurt. They were going to die. And in fact, when the supply of GCMAF was cut off, they did in fact die. Those who weren't already cured of the situation. But his crime, well, he didn't go through the established procedures. Remember again what I said about bureaucrats. They are all about procedure, little about outcome. So he didn't follow procedure, even though his outcome is absolutely off the charts fabulous. I mean, his success rate with breast cancer is about 80%. Prostate cancer about the same, colon cancer the same. He never lost a single person to pancreatic cancer. Didn't have a high number of those, but people came to him with stage 4 liver and pancreatic cancer, and they lived. And so this is the thanks he gets. He gets the full weight of the British government on his shoulders, and he may have to serve time. We'll find out in a couple of weeks. If he does, he could get up to 10 years.
Right. Yeah, well, of course, that's a very familiar story in the whole area of complementary and alternative medicine. Regular intervals throughout history, people have stuck their head above the parapet with something novel and have had to be shut up very quickly. And one of the biggest motivating factors in medicine, and in particularly in cancer, of course, is the amount of money that's being made. And it does seem that most of these are a greater threat to profit than they are to life. Even if they don't work, they're actually generally pretty safe. So one is naturally drawn to thinking, well, it's more about the profits that they're threatening than it is about anything else. What do you think?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, what has been estimated, $200 billion a year industry? And, you know, the success rate for chemotherapy, depending upon whether you go by the Australian study or the American study, is either 1.5% or 2.5%. That's the success rate for doing chemotherapy. It's a horrible, horrible rate. And if you look at the side effects on the package insert for chemotherapy, you'll see one of the side effects warned against is may cause cancer. So why go through all of that and subject oneself to that torture when you have some other means that are far, far greater? I mean, I can just roll off some other things that have successfully treated tumors and the like. 3-bromopyruvate, 3-BP, is another one available sort of off and on in the States, I think, maybe elsewhere. But 3-BP has shown huge success against cancer tumors and the like. But the main thing that people need to do if they, and I'm not a doctor, so please, your doctor's advice takes precedence over mine. Mine is not even advice. It's just what I've read, and I'm sure in the literature, is that you go low carbohydrate, you eliminate all sugar from your diet, all dairy products from your diet, except perhaps organic butter, but certainly everything else. And you take high-dose vitamin D3, at least 10,000 international units a day. And like I was saying before, vitamin C, and eat organic as much as you can, because there's actually a substance. And I think the gentleman's name, the author's name is Brian Schaefer, but I could be wrong on it. He wrote a book called Salvesterols, S-A-L-V-E-S-T-R-O-L-S, Salvesterols, that are found in all sort of fruits and vegetables, but much more so in organic foods, because fruits and vegetables, because it's sort of a protective mechanism by the plant against parasites and other attackers, and it's far richer in organic than in non-organic, because the pesticides that are sprayed on the non-organic sort of tell the plant, oh, I don't need to produce as many salvesterols because I'm already being somewhat protected. So in any event, those salvesterols are kind of like little internal saboteurs in the cancer cells, and they get in there and they will hurt and destroy cancer cells, but not normal cells. So that's another mechanism by which one could go. There's so much out there, but the main problem is, you know, sort of the general principle that the more remedies there are for any particular illness, the less likely that any one of them will work. So that also applies to cancer. And it's also an area, because it's has to operate under the table, so to speak, it's rife with a lot of fraudulent actors and so on, because they can't, you know, it's sort of like the principle of Grisham's money, where bad money drives out good money. Well, it applies in the healthcare area as well, when you have something that can't be above board. So otherwise, it's the reverse of Grisham's law. So that's what we have, and it's an ongoing fight. And at National Health Federation, what we do is we try to publicize all of this. And if people go to our website, they can read a lot of these stories and get acquainted with some of these cancer cures. They can also get on our email list, because we don't inundate people or spam them with emails. It's just occasionally, and we certainly don't sell or trade the names to other lists. But if you will, any of your listeners will sign up on our email list, they'll be, apprised of a lot of this as well.
Mm. So what's clear from what you just said is that although Codex Alimentarius is a kind of key thing that you're engaged with at the NHF, you've got a very wide remit, in fact.
Yes. In fact, we had a big campaign going in Ireland a few years back where we're trying to get, they fluoridate their public water supply there greatly, mm-hmm. and we were trying to get that eliminated. We did not succeed with that, but it's still something that we would like to do. You know, even in the UK, they do it in some communities, I think like Bournemouth or Southampton and the like, where it's local, but it's not as extensive as in Ireland, where it's really bad. Anyway, we do get involved in many other things, you're right. A lot of the vaccine rallies in Italy, I went weekend after weekend to speak in Trieste, Treviso, Venice, Rome, and the like, against the mandatory vaccine laws that were being put in place in Italy last year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so can we just come back to GM for a moment? From where we sit over here, it's easy to get the impression that the US is GM, but a visit a few weeks ago that I made to California showed me that there are now actually GMO-free counties, and indeed buying organic food is far, far easier there than it is in my home county of Surrey in the UK. So how do you see the whole GM and organic food story developing? Where do you think we're heading?
I think they're heading for disaster, and I'll be the first to announce that Monsanto's going to take, now Bayer, because they merge, is going to take a dive, and I'll announce it publicly on your program first.
Right.
And that is that we have just discovered some secret about Roundup that everyone's overlooked. And when I say we, it's not just NHF, but another organization called Moms Across America, and they deserve credit for it as well. In fact, more so probably than us. It's that hidden within Roundup is arsenic. And that's one reason it's so effective. But at the same time, one reason, at least for the stated purposes, but it's also one reason that it's more deadly than just glyphosate alone. Mm. You know, Roundup has been shown to be more carcinogenic than just glyphosate alone, its active ingredient. Well, arsenic has been illegal to use as a pesticide since 1973, at least in the United States.
Wow.
It's totally illegal. So if that's the case, we are going to launch a class action lawsuit in the United States, and I'm in discussion about that right now, to sue the pants off of Bayer and to remove all Roundup products from the market. And so you may see some traction gaining on this, and hopefully we'll have a big victory there. But this is a huge, huge story, actually. Mm. And arsenic is, unfortunately, an ingredient, and maybe fortunately in a way, because it gives us the leverage to get rid of the product once and for all. And they may just substitute another one in without arsenic. But anyway, I didn't really answer your point or your question, Robin. And that is, it is getting better there. And I think it will continue to. But the big problem is that it may be a little late, because glyphosate contamination is so extensive in the U.S., even in non-GMO areas, mm-hmm. that even organic wines in California have a level of glyphosate that's not really acceptable. It's far below the non-organic wines in California. That's why when I go to the States, I don't drink California wines anymore, at least not knowingly. I will order a French wine or a Spanish wine or something like that, because I know my risks of getting glyphosate contamination are far, far less. But, you know, you go into a Mexican restaurant there, I love Mexican food, but you know, the chips are all glyphosate laden and the like, unless they're organic, and that's very few and far between. So we're still getting pulverized with glyphosate contamination there. And I think anyone who goes to the U.S. is taking their health in their hands when they eat at restaurants or eat foods there, unless they're eating organically.
Mm.
And it would apply to Canada also, by the way.
public opinion is definitely moving, maybe slowly, but it definitely seems like the sort of done deal of GM is not quite such a done deal at this point in terms of public choice.
Right. Well, it's true. And but people are waking up and becoming increasingly aware. But the sad thing about it is that there's a lot of pushback on the part of the drug companies, the vaccine industry and the like, and they don't play nice. No. So this is something to be aware of, and they have a lot of the politicians in their pockets. You know, this is a big problem, not only in Europe, but in North America, is people look to agencies like the MHRA or the FDA or Health Canada or EFSA in Brussels, and they look to them and they expect them to protect the public. But what they don't realize is that all of these agencies have been captured. They've been captured by the very industries they're meant to regulate, and they become nothing but enforcer thugs for those industries. So when people say, well, we need to reduce the power of corporations and build up the power of government, well, they kind of only have it partly right. The part they have wrong is, you know, if you had the mafia in control of enforcing stuff, would you want to give them more guns and more weapons and more power? Of course not. You want to take it away. So the it's a little bit counterintuitive, but what we all need to do is reduce the power of the MHRA, reduce the power of the FDA and Health Canada, just as examples, and we'll find they're less able to carry out the wishes of their paymasters, the big pharmaceutical companies, the big agricultural companies, and the like. So we need to take power away from those people. We need to do more thinking, more personal responsibility to make wise decisions on the part of the consumers. Right now, most consumers just hand over their brains to the MHRA, and they think, oh, I go into a Marks and Spencer and buy some food and it's all safe because MHRA is there protecting me. Mm-hmm. And they park their brains at the door when they enter at Tesco or wherever, and they don't pick them up maybe even on the way out. But we all need to take, you know, the flip side of liberty is responsibility. And we need to all take personal responsibility and start thinking about this and making wise choices and not trusting, you know, that the agencies are looking out for our interests, because they really, truly are not. Oh, of course, you'll have some people here and there in the MHRA who are good guys or good gals. I've encountered them, and I've encountered them at the FDA, but they aren't the ones who set the policy, and they're fewer and far between than we might wish. So we need to take personal responsibility, not listen to the experts. Remember, the experts built the Titanic, amateurs built the Ark, and which was a more successful ship. So we need to be careful and take responsibility, assert our freedom and our rights, and actually all the societies who allow that are far healthier and far more successful in far more peaceful societies even than those who have all sorts of mandates and coercive powers and the like. You know, I once, when I was moving from the States to Europe, I wanted to live in the UK. I'm so glad I didn't. I see how repressive it is there now. And it's not like France is any better, but, you know, as my friend Harry Schultz, this great financial advisor, said once, it's better to be a tourist in someone else's country than be a citizen in your own, because they really go after you if you're a citizen. But if you're a tourist, hey, what are you doing? You aren't taking away jobs, you're spending money, you're helping the economy, we want to welcome you, and so on. So so in any event, I think any of these Anglo-Saxon countries are increasingly becoming prisons, whether it's Australia, Canada, the United States, Great Britain, Ireland. I mean, we're just looking at, you know, increasing prison camps and the like, prison camp society, using the term loosely. So we have to fight back against that. And part of it, what we do at NHF, is fight back on the health front. And that's what we've been doing for 63 years now, so wow. We'll keep going.
That's quite a track record. So look, we're getting to the end. So do you want to just quickly tell us what your key priorities for the NHF are right now and what you foresee they're going to be in the coming years, where you're going to be focusing most of your attention?
Well, most of our attention will go on the vaccine issues to reduce the 70 mandated vaccines, something reasonable or even none. And we'll also be on Codex, of course, because we are the preeminent, the only health freedom group attending Codex meetings. So we're oftentimes the only consumer voice at these meetings. So we'll be focusing on eliminating glyphosate, aspartame, fighting this biofortification definition, and any of the multitude of other things that come up at these meetings, and try to launch some of our own more, you know, health-friendly plans there at Codex as well. We also want to repeal, at least in the United States, the 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Act, which gives immunity from lawsuits to the pharmaceutical industries, the vaccine makers. And we figure if we are able to eliminate that, then it'll go a long way to saving a lot of these kids who are vaccine injured from having that continue. You know, this is a huge problem in the UK as well as Canada and the US and many other countries. And we want to stop that. So that's, and the glyphosate issue, of course, as I mentioned, is a huge one. So those are our priorities, I think, at the moment. But we're certainly open to others, saving individual doctors, helping people like David Noakes and the others who are facing charges for saving people's lives. That sort of thing. So we welcome anyone to join us. We need more members in the UK, need to become more active there. We've put on events there in Manchester and London and Birmingham and elsewhere, but, you know, we're sort of in the doldrums right now in the UK, and it really needs some activists to help. So if anyone's interested, please connect with me through our website. You can write our email address and ask for me. Anyway, I'm happy to say that we're still on solid grounds, NHF is, so we foresee continuing for quite some time. But it does help to have donations as well, because otherwise we have to cut back on meetings that we can go to. This year, for example, we didn't get to go to the pesticide residue or the food additives committee because we didn't have the money to fly to China. So that would have been a bridge too far for us, unfortunately, financially.
Right. It's a bit of a knife edge, the whole thing, a life in the charity sector. But it certainly sounds like you've got plenty on your plate for the coming years.
Yes.
Do you want to quickly mention two things, your book and your magazine?
Oh, yeah, thank you. In fact, I have one here. We put out for members, for our members only. You don't subscribe. If you're a member of NHF, you get the magazine. It comes out quarterly. And quite honestly, when we've had it at the meetings in Birmingham and Manchester and London, all of the magazines go. I don't even mean just all but one. I mean every single one. And that's how popular they are, even in the UK, although most of the material, of course, is stated for the US market. But it's still pretty universal, you know, about vaccines, vaccine injuries, about aspartame, about Codex and the like. That's very universal. Some are particular, like the British Injustice when it comes to GCMAF and the like. But the magazine comes out quarterly. You can access back issues through our website. If you're a member, you can access even current issues. But if you aren't, you can still go back. I think it's a two-year window where we block it, so it's exclusive for members only. But beyond 2 years, then anyone in the public can get on their line and see the PDF version of it. So I invite any of the listeners to go do that. And then the Codex book, we're going to come up with a new one, but we still have the one that's there in place. I would invite any of your listeners who want one of the Codex books. You can see it online. I'll give a special offer to your listeners.
Great.
That if they want one, if they will just pay for the postage to ship it to the UK, and I'm not sure what that will be. We'll have to figure it out. We will send them an otherwise free copy of the Codex book from our California location. So it'd be California to the UK. They just have to mention your name and your program. And if they do, I'll let the office know that if they get an order from anyone referencing you, that it's just the cost of postage. We'll send it to them. And it's a good sort of primer on Codex. To be honest, it's a little bit dated because it doesn't mention the most recent stuff, but it still is good for giving a solid basis about Codex and what it's all about. So, and I'll make sure to mention to the office to give that special rate to any of your listeners.
Brilliant, brilliant. Okay, so just mention Yes to Life and you get a free book.
Yes, you only have to pay for postage. I will say that because we can't afford to send it to the UK from California for everyone. But otherwise, there's no charge for the book itself.
Fantastic.
So I estimate the postage would probably be 5 to 6 pounds or something like that. Yeah. I would also recommend, Robin, that any of your listeners go to the NHF UK website, which is nhf.co.uk, and it will have a lot of material pertinent to the UK members and public.
Thank you very much indeed. We're going to end it there, Scott. I'd just like to say it's certainly great that somebody is taking interest in these things, as I imagine a lot of it's kind of stultifyingly nitpicking stuff, that trying to fight on a legal basis some of these initiatives. So a big personal thank you from me for all your efforts to try and maintain some sort of control of these corporations with their relentless drive to feed off our demise and the demise of our environment. So it's absolutely great that people are working in that field, and I'm wholly supportive.
Well, thank you for that. And, you know, I really appreciate programs such as yours because you're really the way to get the message out. You can't get it through the mainstream media or the conventional or controlled media. It has to be through programs like yours. So my hat's off to all your listeners as well, because they obviously have IQ points much higher than the general population in knowing to listen to your program. So kudos to you too, Robin, for all that you do.
All right. Well, thank you very much indeed, Scott.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it being on your program. Please feel free to have me on again if there are other things that you would like to talk about. And I can certainly go into more detail on other items as well. Thank you, Robin.
Look out for links to material mentioned by Scott on the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Just click the show logo on the homepage. Coming up in just a few short weeks, our annual flagship event, the Yes to Life International Conference. It's titled Starting the Conversation, Exploring the Potential of Integrative Medicine. We're featuring international speakers involved in the development of integrative medicine abroad, as well as some of the very best homegrown initiatives to broaden the scope of healthcare here in the UK. It's on the 1st of December in central London, and you can find full details and book your place on the Yes to Life website events page. Again, that's yestolife.org.uk and click events in the left-hand sidebar. I look forward to bringing you another Yes to Life show next week. Goodbye.